Good evening and welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football, where tonight we're going to break down the league on for the 2018-2019 season. Joining me as always, my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas. And tonight, special guest, Mr. Eric Devine from Get French Football News joining us. Gentlemen, thank you both for coming on the show tonight. Rob, I want to go to you first because we look back on the 17-18 season in the Ligue 1, and we saw the return of PSG to the top. If you remember, the year before, Monaco was champion. We saw PSG make the big moves, pick up Kylian Mbappe, which they made official or finalized this year. As you remember, last year it was a loan. Pick up Neymar in that enormous record-breaking transfer. And you saw much of the old PSG, but now we look forward to this year. No Unai Emery. They bring in Thomas Tuchel. So even PSG's in a little bit of flux, but I'd like to get your thoughts on 17-18 before we jump into 18-19.
Yeah, absolutely. And before you even mention Neymar and Kylian Mbappe, you have to mention Edinson Cavani, who finished as top goal scorer. Florian Thauvin second, who did end up going to the World Cup squad. And, you know, we saw a mix of a lot of players from that team, league that ended up being in the top goal scorers. You look at the Memphis Depay, Balotelli, Falcao, Nabil Fekir, Mariano Diaz. I mean, a lot of these players. And of course, what we've been accustomed to now, and looking at the season real quick, we saw the top six as followed. We have Bordeaux, Rennes, and Marseille all going to the Europa League. We saw PSG win the league with 93 points, a 13-point gap between Monaco, and a 15-point gap with Lyon. But, you know, of course, I think all eyes will now be on Ligue 1 now this season because of the success of the World Cup that's happened. Now, of course, you know, a lot of the French players play outside of Ligue 1, but, you know, you would assume that also, given the success that the French national team is able to have, many people are going to be very interested into seeing what the future holds for French football. And, you know, this goes to my first question here, Eric. I mean, obviously, it's going to be a interesting season, and it's going to be very hard to for any team, at least in Ligue 1, to really surpass and beat PSG with all their depth and attack and everything. But certainly we did see a bunch of moves real quick. So what are your thoughts heading into this new season, especially coming off, you know, a country that had just won the World Cup just a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, I think we've not really seen a lot of action from a lot of last season's top four. Lyon had brought in Martin Terrier and Léo Dubois on free transfers, both excellent moves, but I think that they're still, you know, given the exodus that they've had in terms of Moutar Diakabi in particular, it's going to leave them a little bit more thin at center back. You know, Nabil Fekir's situation, maybe he's staying at the club, that still needs to be resolved as well. Monaco have obviously seen a host of players go, most notably Fabinho and Thomas Lemar. They brought in some interesting players, Aoulou from Strasbourg and Golovin from CSKA Moscow most recently. But again, I don't really see any of that top four having made a net improvement. And I think that that's really going to make for an interesting race outside for the Champions League. I still think PSG has to be overwhelming favorites for the title. I think that even if Neymar is unfocused and distracted by the rumors that we've heard about him this summer, is he going to Real Madrid next summer? Is there still a move yet to come for him? I still think that the level of talent that PSG have vis-a-vis the flux that these other teams are in still should be enough to give PSG the title. But I think that the race in the top four could be very, very open. And I think we might see some surprises coming into the season in terms of who's sliding into that top six in France.
Now, you know, if we look, take our focus from the top of the table and move it back to the bottom of the table, and look at the teams that are promoted, you know, before we do that, we probably look at the two teams that have left in Metz and Troyes. Toulouse actually wins their playoff against Ajaccio and remains in Ligue 1. But before I look at the two teams that are promoted in Nîmes and Reims, I want to look at the bottom of the table because this is another tightly contested bottom of the table. We've seen a couple of these in football in Europe, but here specifically, you had four teams separated by 1 point, with Toulouse being the hard luck losers, but Lille, Caen, and Strasbourg all finish with 38 points, where Toulouse finished with 37. You know, kind of combining two questions into one, with the new arrivals of Nîmes and Reims, and I want to get into them in a second, how do you feel they fare against this bottom of the table? Can they make a little noise and do something impressive like Angers did? Even Dijon, you know, who's been there a couple of years, you know, make their way towards the middle and even the top of the table?
I think they have to look at what these clubs' ambitions are. Speaking specifically of the promoted clubs, Nîmes have been very active this term. I mean, they lost Romain de Castillo, who had been on loan with them. He went back to Lyon, but they've brought in some really intriguing players. Dennis Bouanga, who's been with Lorient for a few years, is a really impressive younger prospect. I think we could really look to see him continue the form he's had, be a 10-goal, 5-assist player on the left wing there. They've also brought in Mustafa Diallo, who's been a stalwart for Guingamp for some time, and Loic Landre and Herve Liboye, who are both Ligue 2 central defenders. I think Nîmes have really positioned themselves well. They've also brought in the young goalkeeper, Paul Bernardoni, on loan from Bordeaux. So Nîmes have shown that they're willing to spend and willing to stay in this league. Reims, the traffic's been far more out there than it has been in. Diego Reganato and Jordan Cibacheu, both very key elements of that attack last year. They both left. Diego is a bit of an older player. I think he's 30, 31. He went to somewhere in the Middle East, I want to say maybe the Gulf League. Obviously looking for a payday, but the quality of players they brought in, I mean, the interesting players, yes, Tristan Dingome from Troyes looks like good science in our midfield, but I don't see Reims being at the same level as Neymar in terms of ambition. Mm-hmm. In terms of those other clubs that have barely stayed up, I think that we look at probably for me, Caen are in the most trouble. I think that this is a team that had relied quite a bit on the ingenuity of Patrice Garon, their longtime manager. He's gone. He's replaced by a guy called Fabien Mercadal, who had been with Paris FC in Ligue 2, but doesn't have any Ligue 1 experience. And they've lost a lot of their players. Damien De Silva, their center back, their long-term goalkeeper, Remy Vercout, Julien Ferre, who's a midfielder, is gone as well. And also Ivan Santini, their leading scorer the last two seasons. So Caen is going through quite a bit of upheaval in terms of sorting things out there. And I would be worried for them. Strasbourg, I think also there's cause for worry there as well. Most of that defense is gone. Ernest Seca, Bakary Kone, Kader Mangan are all gone. They brought in a new goalkeeper in Matt Sells from Newcastle. That's promising. I think that's a fantastic move on Strasbourg's part. I think they got him for about 4 million euro. But I think the bottom line there is those two teams are the teams that barely stayed up, the Strasbourg and Caen. Those two teams should be looking over their shoulders. They and probably Amiens as well. Amiens have had quite a bit of shift in attack, and I think I'd be a little bit worried for them as well. I think the new sides offer a level of ambition, particularly in terms of need, but also in Rennes, a level of pragmatism and defensive stability that should allow them to stay up. If not comfortably, but ahead of some of those other teams that I've mentioned that don't appear to have done much to recoup the losses that they've suffered this summer to this point in time. I mean, again, we're still open in France, but I would be worried if I were a fan of, again, particularly Caen and Strasbourg.
You know, I seriously want to echo your thoughts on Caen as well, because just looking back, only scoring 27 goals in 38 matches last season in the league. They did nothing to improve their attacking, you know, or their attacking profile. So I think with them, you're going to wonder where the goal is going to come from for them to be able to stay up. So I think Caen is probably even more likely than Strasbourg or even somebody like Amiens, like you had said, to go down. Now, the other thing that was a head scratcher for me was and I'm glad you brought up the name, Jordan Cibacheu, because he's an American. He's actually American, French, and Cameroonian, has not played for any of the three. He's played U21 for France, but this was the big sale that Reims did in this transfer window so far, selling him for £10.6 million to Rennes. I just can't wrap my head around that, because he was the number two goal scorer in Ligue 2 last season. So what did they do that will help their situation to help them to stay up?
What did Reims do? Not much so far. They brought in some players who I think have experience in the league. I mentioned Dingome from Troyes. He had a decent season. Alexis Romao, who people may remember from Marseille, is another solid defensive midfielder. But their big signing this season is Ghislain Konan, who's an Ivorian international left back from Vitória Guimarães from the Portuguese league. But I don't see the scoring prowess and the creativity that Reims had last season as being a thing, as being continued in this season. For Cibacheu personally, I think that the lure of Rennes and the lure of Europa League football, the lure of higher wages, the chance to get on the radar of, you know, the United States men's national team, or perhaps probably not the France senior squad, let's be honest. But I think to have a bigger stage, to play European football, I think that that makes sense as to why he would want them as an individual and the price that Rask got for him. Again, as you mentioned, I think it's 10 million euro. Again, a good price at any rate for a player who's not extensively proven. I think it makes a lot of sense for Rask. Again, the fact of the matter is that for a lot of these French teams, they simply can't afford to say no to figures like this, despite what the player may mean to the team. And I think in the case of Sebaceo, he'd been with the club for, I think, 3 seasons in the first team and, you know, has gradually improved. And I think there's more to come from him. But the opportunity to lead the line at a Rennes side, I mean, again, Rennes have a handful of strikers, but Wadi Khazri, who was the striker for most of last season, is gone. Brandon, another striker there, has been sent out on loan, as has Jordan Tell. So there's a real void at Rennes. And I think that, you know, he sees the opportunity to be scoring 15 or 20 goals for a team that, you know, as it stands right now, you know, Rennes have made some sales as well, looking at particularly at Joris Njanjon to Sevilla. But Rennes could, you know, if things fall their way, could realistically be challenging for the Champions League. And for Sebaceo to turn that down as an individual at this point in his career, I don't see that happening. So, you know, Rennes probably had their hand forced by a player being offered bigger wages and a bigger opportunity to show himself.
Now, Eric, obviously, you know, looking into the next segment, that's our transfers. You know, we haven't seen much activity, at least from what we've been able to see of players coming into Ligue 1. I think the big one was obviously Kylian Mbappe joining PSG for £135 million, €135 million to from Monaco. But, you know, in comparison, you look at Monaco getting players like Alexander Golovin, who, you know, had a great World Cup for Russia. You know, you obviously see the transfer of Gigi Buffon leaving Juventus after many, many years, going to PSG. It's certainly, we haven't seen a lot of activity, at least in terms of players coming into Ligue 1, but certainly the one thing that we've been able to talk about mainly is certainly that of managers coming in. You know, you look at, obviously, the main ones, I would say, are Thomas Tuchel coming into PSG for the resigned Unai Emery. You look at Mio Cardoso coming in at Nantes to replace Claudio Ranieri. And then you have Patrick Vieira, who a lot of people well know him, being the former manager of NYCFC, coming in to replace Lucien Favre, who, you know, obviously went to Borussia Dortmund. So, yeah, it's certainly been, I would say, an interesting transfer window, at least for managers in that perspective. But I want to go first and talk about Thomas Tuchel, because obviously he's a manager that we well know from his days at Borussia Dortmund. You know, he comes into a PSG side that is definitely brand new because of the likes of Neymar and Mbappe. You know, you look at Gigi Buffon being in goal. It's certainly going to be a team of superstars in that way. Do you feel that Tuchel, you know, I would assume is trying to manage such a thing for the first time in his career? Do you feel that he will do a good job at this thing, or do you feel that, you know, the personalities happening at PSG would be a bit too much for him to handle?
I have to say more of the latter. I mean, Tuchel obviously is best known for his spell at Borussia Dortmund, where he was tasked with continuing the development of a relatively young squad of players. But his methods were seen as too rigorous there, and he frequently clashed with a lot of players. And I think that the cult of personality that continues in the PSG dressing room, particularly vis-a-vis their Brazilians, I'm looking specifically at Dani Alves, Thiago Silva, and Neymar, I don't see Tuchel as having the backing of the sporting hierarchy there to influence that dressing room in the way that he wants to be given the respect that he wants. Perhaps, you know, the arrival of Gigi Buffon will help him and allow some continuity and some solidity into that dressing room. But I'm not really optimistic. I think that Tuchel can make this team more defensively sound, but in terms of getting them on the same page and having a sense of harmony, I think there's a lot of problems still with this team. Adrian Rabiot is rumored to be leaving this summer. He has stuck around. But again, you know, how happy he is there, potentially not playing as you have the likes of Christopher Nkunku and Giovanni Lo Celso potentially passing him up in the rotation. You've got the relationship between Neymar and Kylian Mbappe. That's still to be determined how that's figured out. I mean, Kylian Mbappe just won a World Cup. He's one of the best players in that World Cup. How content he's going to be second fiddle to Neymar at this point in his career remains to be seen. And Cavani, again, he's going to come back from an injury in the World Cup. He's actually not scheduled to play next week's Trophée des Champions. But I think there are still a lot of problems to be addressed in this PSG squad. And some players did leave this summer. Ben Arfa, Thiago Motta retired. Javier Pastore or Berchich, but I don't see the atmosphere in that dressing room improving. I don't see there being a cohesive plan for this team to move forward as a unit in a sporting and a collective sense. And I think that Tuchel is going to have as hard, if not a harder time than he did at Dortmund in terms of getting these players to listen to him, to be on the same page to move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe, I mean, I'll echo the same question to you, because obviously I think now the ambition, at least what we've been seeing for quite some time for PSG, you know, their ambition is to not just win Liga, not win the Coupe de la France or Coupe de la Ligue, it's to win the Champions League. That's been the ambition since the Qataris took over. I mean, you know, certainly it's going to be difficult given how every season has gone for PSG, but, you know, how do you think a manager like Tuchel is able to manage these players, these superstars, I would say, and then, of course, world champions in that sense, and achieve that goal? I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think for me, Tuchel has to, do a great job in terms of managing the egos. I think that's first and foremost. If the eye on the prize is the Champions League, more so where we've talked about other teams in our various preview shows, and we talked about the ability to maintain health and to maintain freshness in players, even some of the aging ones. We don't really have aging ones at the key positions here per se. I mean, maybe Angel Di Maria is a quote-unquote aging one, but Neymar is still very young. Kylian Mbappe, obviously, we know he's still on the south side of 20. So, for me, it's not that he needs to manage their time, you know, their time on the pitch, you know, and give them meaningful minutes but not overwork them. For me, Tuchel's job, and especially if Cavani stays, and I think that's a big if here, I think it's his job to manage the egos, to really do a great job of managing the egos, make everyone feel like they're the best. And can Tuchel do that? I think he can. I think he's a good enough manager to do that. But we saw it kind of rear its ugly head. If you remember last season, we think back to the whole penalty fiasco with Neymar and Cavani. You know, when you start to see these rifts happen in the locker room, then that leads to bigger problems. And I think Tuchel's job is going to that's going to be one of the main focuses of his job, is to manage the egos. And I've got to tell you, if there was ever a move, I mean, we'll all look at the Mbappe move, which was really made official this season or this transfer window. But if you look back, we're going to look back on the success and failure of the locker room based on the Gigi Buffon acquisition, because we all know what kind of a leader Gigi Buffon can be on the pitch, off the pitch, in the locker room, you know, at the grocery store. I mean, he's that kind of person that mandates that type of quality above all else. And I think that he is the right choice inside the locker room to go ahead and continue with that. We'll have to see what Gigi offers to the locker room that allows Tuchel to work with the egos to manage everybody and move forward. So let's continue on with looking at some of these teams here. I think PSG is a fascinating one. We'll come back to them in a minute. But I do want to jump over to Marseille, finishing fourth last season in Ligue 1. You know, Rudy Garcia, I believe, if I remember correctly, in his first season. You look back at Marseille, a few years ago had a massive fire sale. We haven't seen quite that much as of this season, especially they bring in Jordan Amavi, they bring in Duje Caledesar from Red Bull Salzburg, and really haven't given up much. They've spent a few bucks, but they haven't been incredibly active in this transfer window. So, Eric, I want to go to you and ask you about Marseille's fortunes leading, you know, moving forward, especially this is a team that finished at 77 points. They were well in control of fourth place. Renault was not going to challenge them. They were mainly fighting for that Champions League, Europa League spot, which they ended up eventually losing to Lyon. But what does Rudy Garcia do in this season now that maybe gets him past either Monaco or past Lyon and into that Champions League spot?
I think he just needs to think about how he prioritizes things. I mean, last season, Marseille getting to the Europa League final, their squad was stretched very thin. We saw that with a rash of injuries to Dimitri Payet. Tovin missed a couple of matches as well. And I think that the way that Marseille prioritized, we're trying to balance, rightfully so, Europa League campaign and a battle for the top three in France, made their fortune suffer in both regards, even though they did get to the final. I think, honestly, what they're doing right now is holding firm. They want Mario Balotelli from Nice. They're prepared to offer Remy Capella as a make weight in that, if reports are to be believed. But Mino Raiola is holding that deal up at present. So the bringing in of Dileta Carr, I like that. I like the added depth to that line. I mean, they do have some interesting younger players there. Young defender Bubakar Kamara is interesting, but that partnership of Adil Rami and Jorge Rolando is not getting any younger. So I think that Garcia is being smart about adding depth there. You've also got some players coming back on loan. Saif Eddine Al-Kawai had a pretty good season at Troyes, and I think can add a little bit more creativity, could spell Florian Thauvin at times. He's a number 10/right-sided attacker. So there's a little bit more depth in Marseille this season. To me, at this point in time, Balotelli would make this a certainty, a near certainty for me. But Marseille is currently constructed. I think we saw also more from Kostas Mitroglou down the back end of the season than he'd offered in the beginning of the season. Are probably favorites for second if they're able to strike the right balance between the Europa League and a domestic campaign. They didn't really have the depth last year, but I'm quietly confident they have a little bit more depth this season. So I think that, again, a striker, you know, who can be the Bate Gomis of 2 years ago and get them 15 or 20 goals would be ideal. If it's Balotelli, great, but I think that perhaps, you know, Mitroglou deserves a little bit more chance of that, and you've got more creativity coming into the team as well in the form potentially Cabella if he stays, and Kawi as well. So all in all, you know, Marseille haven't been making noises that their fans might want them to be making, but I don't think that we should view that as a negative. I think that we should view this team as growing in depth. Gregory Sertic was another player who missed quite a bit of last season. He's very versatile in terms of being able to play in central defense and in midfield. So I think with Marseille being healthy, Rudy Garcia having a more holistic way to approach this team going forward, I think that you're going to see Marseille be a leg up. And given the sort of unstable situations and the flux that we see at Lyon and Monaco, Marseille, for me right now, are favorites for second.
Now, obviously, looking into another team that has just qualified to the Champions League, in third place was Lyon, who finished at 78 points, 1 point above Marseille. Certainly, it's going to be another interesting season, because if you remember last year, you know, they did sell off Alexandre Lacazette to Arsenal, and, you know, there were doubts as to where the goals were going to come from, but, you know, you look at the players that came in, like Nabil Fekir, the captain, you look at the great season that we saw from Memphis Depay and Mariano Diaz, but, you know, they did bring off a good business so far. You know, they did get a balance of, at the moment, of plus £47.7 million. You know, they did get in Leo Dubois on a free and Omar Solet from Laval, but they did sell off players like Sergi Darbar, you know, and William Jubels to Monaco. You know, they did make, of course, Mukhtar Diaby to Valencia. I mean, certainly they made a lot of, I would say, you know, value in this case, but certainly they definitely have the team to do something in the Champions League. You know, it's the first time they're back in the Champions League in quite some time. I mean, what are your thoughts on Lyon so far, Eric, especially given that they do have the talent capable of, you know, achieving, well, not exactly maybe a Champions League run, but certainly if they can do, I'm sorry, not a win, but certainly they can go far in the Champions League and surprise some people this season. I mean, what are your thoughts on Lyon heading into the new season?
I think Jean-Michel Aulas, the president, needs to take his hand out of his pocket and he needs to spend money. This team struggled last year, like Marseille did in the Europa League and in the Champions and in the run in the league, with depth. They really needed another defensive midfielder, an orthodox number six, to replace Luka Tussart and to allow for rotation in that regard. They needed another center back. And what have the team done to this point in time? They've sold Sergi Darder, a central midfielder. He's moved to Espanyol's been made permanent. They've sold Nicolas Nkoulou to Torino. His loan has been made permanent. They sold Mukhtar Diakabi to Valencia. Not a fan of Diakabi. I don't think he's any great loss. But that, coupled with the sale previously last summer of Manuel Mamana, means that Lyon have brought in these center backs or brought them through the academy and are selling them on without allowing them a chance to influence the first team. I mean, right now, the situation is Lyon have three center backs. One of them is Jeremy Morel, who's 34 years old, will be 35 by the time the season's over. Another one's Marcelo, who's been wanted by West Ham, and who at 30, 31 is going to find it very difficult to refuse to make a move given the money on offer. And the third's Mapuyanga Mbiwa, who I don't think played a competitive match past December due to the choices of Bruno Genesio, the manager. So Lyon need to spend money. They need a central defender. They need another midfielder who can play in a holding role if they're going to continue to play, whether it's a diamond 4-2 4-4-2, a diamond 4-4-2 or a 4-3-3. Luka Tusar can't play 60 matches. I think we saw that the work that's asked of Leon's defensive midfield isn't something that any player can realistically cope with, let alone a player who's still as young as Tusar is. He's only 21. So, you know, I like the signing of Dubois. Terrier was fantastic for Strasbourg before being injured. But this money they brought in, the sale of Goebbels to Monaco, the sale of Jean-Philippe Mateta to Mainz, the sale of Romain De Castillo to Rennes. De Castillo, you know, is a little bit older. I think he's 23, but he's impressed on various spells at Lyon and Nîmes. He's looked good for the French under-21s. Lyon seemed to be stockpiling money with no apparent plan. Now, maybe it'll come off if they'll get, you know, a very impressive center back and a defensive midfielder at some point. But until that does happen, I really have to question how this team's depth is going to affect them going into the season. Fekir, you know, looks set to stay, but, you know, how focused, how happy is he going to be, given how close he was to joining one of the Champions League finalists? You know, the same thing, Tanguy Ndombele had a fantastic first season for Lyon. His name's been bandied about to Spurs, to Roma. These links continue, and, you know, where's his head going to be turned? You know, Houssem Aouar is on the verge of becoming that level of player as well. Memphis Depay and Bertrand Traore, Mariano Diaz. These teams have all been linked as well. And, you know, there's obvious places to offload. Right back, the team have three orthodox right backs right now in Kenny Tett, Raphael, and Leo Dubois. So there's a player to be sold. One of those attackers as well, Maxwell Cornet, Jordan Ferry is a midfielder that could be sold. There's more players that could be sold, but Lyon simply need to bring some depth and balance into the squad if they're going to have any chance of reaching the top three and even progressing in the Champions League. We need to see what kind of draw they get, obviously, in the group stage before we can really make a call on that. But it's not been a very optimistic start to the summer from my perspective. I'm a Lyon supporter. That's the team I follow in France. I've been following them for quite a long time. I can remember, you know, the days of Juninho and Fred and Sonny Anderson, but this is given what this team could be achieving in terms of these young players and what they've and how reticent they've been to spend. I mean, let's not forget there's a positive balance from last summer also, from the sales of the likes of Gonalon, Valbuena, Lacazette, Corentin Tolisso. There's a surplus from that. Lyon are financing this new stadium, but again, Jean-Michel Aulas has a real chance. There's a real power vacuum, given how unsettled Monaco are, for Lyon to comfortably step into second place in the league. And really, this team has the attacking talent to challenge PSG for the title. That sounds absurd, but if you look at the seasons that Depay, Diaz, Traore, Fekir all had, and if they all come close to that again, that's that team scoring 80 or 90 goals. And, you know, even if the defense is a little shaky, you know, Lyon should be winning these matches. So if Lyon can invest properly in their defense and in their defensive midfield, there could be a title race this season. But if Aulas is still looking at the big picture financially, he doesn't see that, it's going to be a very frustrating season for Lyon and their fans.
No doubt about it. And, you know, you unfortunately, we've seen this happen a couple of times, and the next team that I want to talk about is no stranger to what would be perceived as a fire sale. But I think in Lyon, that, like you said, Eric, they're kind of stockpiling this money a little bit, but at the same time, they're still talented enough that they can challenge, you know, at the upper echelon of Ligue 1 for, you know, even PSG and Monaco, just to push those two teams. So it's going to be interesting to see how, I think, how they manage the season, like you said, especially with their depth, given the Champions League competition, how they manage the season, and then what they do maybe even in the winter transfer window, maybe to bring a couple of players in here or there that complement and maybe give these guys a little bit of a rest, or do they just continue to stockpile, maybe sell off some of these players like the Nabil Fekirs and Memphis Depays that you've mentioned. Hopefully it doesn't come to that because, you know, especially in those two players, in Fekir and Depay, really seen them flourish at Lyon. And you'd want to see them continue that growth there because I think they could stake with Lyon for a long time and you know, grow the team into something that would challenge year in and year out for the next two teams we're going to talk about. But I want to jump over to Monaco now because it just amazes me when we look back 2 years ago with this team that won the Ligue 1 title, that if I remember correctly, got to the semifinals of the Champions League. They've truly dismantled this team, you know, head to toe at this point. And you look back at this particular transfer window, I know that, like I said earlier, the Kylian Mbappe transfer was made official, you know, financially this particular window. So the number is a little skewed. But they've stockpiled over 200 million pounds in this transfer window because of sales not only of Kylian Mbappe, but we'll look back at Thomas Lamar, Terrence N'Golo. You know, we talk about Mbappe again. You know, they sold Diakabi, even Joao Moutinho in the midfield. They got rid of him as well. They have made some moves, though, to come, you know, bring a couple players in. We've mentioned Goebbels before from Lyon. We've talked about Alexander Golovin, who had a fantastic World Cup and comes in from CSKA Moscow. I also want to mention, you know, the young Italian Pietro Pellegrini, who's only 17 years old, made the move last season from Genoa. So he's another great piece. I mean, you look at this team and you look at the Monaco side on paper and you think to yourself, wow, they've sold off incredible, incredible talent. But you look at the team on paper now and you're like, this team is still talented that they can challenge. So with the likes of Keita Baldi, you know, Radamel Falcao is still there as the captain. They have Yuri Tielemans. They have Getzal in the midfield as well. My question to you, Eric, is this defensive side. Obviously, Jemerson's going to be one of the starting backs, Camille Glick, probably the other starting center back. They have aging Andrea Raggi. What do they do at center back here? Because I don't think they can go through with just those three players rotating center back through the entire season and compete on all levels. So what are your thoughts on the defense for Monaco?
Yeah, I think that they could use an upgraded right back. Djibril Sidibé is, yeah, he's a French international, but I think that he's much more of an attacking talent than he is defensive talent. That's an issue for me. Jorge Serrano, the left back, you know, I think that they could do with an upgrade on him. So I think it remains to be seen. The third center back, as the team is currently constructed, is a player called Kevin Ndoram, who I believe is 22 or 23. He's able to play defensive midfield or center back, and he's not bad. I mean, he's a decent third option. I don't think they necessarily need depth in center back. I think what this team needs is for some more of these gambles to pay off. I mean, Golovin is a name that's caught the eye, but for me, what's going to make Monaco an important player this year is the players that have proved that are still young, but have proven themselves in Liga. The ones that I want to particularly mention are Jean-Yurezu Aulu, who comes from Strasbourg. He's defensive midfielder, but also offers a good amount going forward. He's got a good eye for goal. Maybe a comparison could be Tanguy Ndombele. He's not as quite as neat with the ball at his feet, but he's definitely got a motor on him. Or Jeffrey Kondogbia could be a comparison as well. It's a really, really canny move at about 13 million euro. The young right back from Saint-Etienne, Renaud Pierre-Gabriel, I think he's absolutely got the skill and the talent to move ahead of Djibril Sidibé in that lineup. Youssef Ait Benacer is another central midfielder, very good with the ball at his feet, a very tidy player. He's coming back from a season on loan at Caen, where he did very, very well. Also Samuel Granser, who's a wide player and who's really come good. I think that Monaco, you know, may struggle to make the Champions League this year. I think as my hypothetical table is currently constructed, I have them fourth. I have Lyon edging them for I have Lyon in third and Monaco in second, or sorry, Marseille in second. But I think that, you know, perhaps if Monaco are finished bottom of their group in the Champions League and are able to, that's not the ideal, but it would allow them to focus on the league campaign and the run-in. And, you know, as these young players improve over the course of the season, the players I mentioned and Goebbels from Lyon, who's looked fantastic, but obviously had a situation surrounding his contract. He wanted to be paid quite a bit more. Jean-Michel Aulas said, no, we're not breaking the bank for you. I don't care who you are. There's a lot to be optimistic about with this team. I mean, it's going to be a reconstructed midfield, as I said, but I think that in Ait Benacer and Aulu, you have proven talent. You know, in the past, we've looked at how Monaco succeeded in bringing in the likes of, Fabinho, in particular, Bernardo Silva, players who had flourished in lower down leagues in other countries. But these are players who've done it now for most of them a season or more in Ligue 1. And I think that's going to make a big difference that, you know, Jardim's going to still have to work on getting this team to play together as a whole. But these players aren't going to be cowed by having to play, you know, in front of a chaudron, the Saint-Étienne Stadium, or a full Parc OL, or a full Velodrome. They're going to be used to the level of play in France, and they're going to be able to have an idea of what standard it takes to succeed there. And if they're willing to listen to Jardim in terms of his tactical ideas and his planning personnel-wise, and strike a balance, and again, between the Champions League and the league, at least in the season's first 3 months, you know, I don't know that it will necessarily see that much of a drop-off from Monaco. I don't see them as being complete and experienced and as reliable a team as Marseille or as a Lyon. But, I mean, I think I probably thought that last season, given the exodus of players after they'd won the title. And, you know, flash forward 10 months after, you know, the sale of the likes of Mendy, Bernardo Silva, and you've got Monaco finishing second again. So I think the lesson here that we've learned year in and year out since Monaco first burst onto the scene under Jardim in 2015, that upset of Arsenal, is never underestimate this manager, never underestimate his ability to get a tune out of these young players. And I think that they're definitely going to be a team to watch, even as they get you know, perhaps a little bit younger and more untested this season with the likes of Moutinho, Fabinho, and Lamar leaving.
Yeah, you mentioned Jardim real quick, Eric. Do you see him staying at the end of the season? You know, because I believe he has a new contract, I think, until 2020. But, you know, do you see him staying at the end of the season regardless of what happens, especially, you know, given the fact they've been selling so much of their talent in recent years? You know, do you feel that Jardim could definitely go for a new challenge outside of France?
It's very hard to get a read on him. I mean, certainly he has the ability in terms of developing young players. But the other thing you have to remember, Rob, is that particular skill set that aptitude for developing young players isn't going to be necessarily what other clubs need. I mean, do a Chelsea, do a Manchester United, do a Manchester City, do a Barcelona, do a Real Madrid, do a Bayern Munich. Do those teams operate on that model of developing young players and improving them? Certainly, we know Pep Guardiola has improved quite a few players. I think it can be fair to argue that Jose Mourinho has improved a handful of players. And, you know, looking at Lukaku, Eric Bailly at Manchester United, you know, obviously Chelsea have a new manager, but certainly I think that we can argue that Conte at least initially improved players at Chelsea. I think the question is, would he, given the autonomy he seems to enjoy in terms of how he selects his teams, how he constructs these teams in concert with the sporting directors there, I don't know if he'd enjoy that level of autonomy, and I don't know that he'd enjoy that level of success at a bigger club. So I think in a lot of ways for him, you know, perhaps Monaco is the ideal situation that he can continue to develop players. You know, obviously if the right sort of job opens up for him and he's given autonomy, he's given an ability to develop a team in the way he sees fit, I could see him going. But the way that Europe's top clubs are currently run, I don't see that being out there, frankly. You know, since Arsene Wenger's left, Arsenal, I don't really see much in terms of, if you look across the leagues, managers who also are the end-all be-all in terms of how the playing staff is constructed. There's still a group of sporting directors or a sporting director who have final say in that decision. Now, you're probably not going to stop giving Pep Guardiola what he wants, but I mean, you know, even this summer, you know, Jorginho, for example, goes to Chelsea instead of Manchester City. It's a fact that Pep Guardiola wanted that player. Why didn't they get him? I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of the English transfer window to that degree, but the fact of the matter is, even Manchester City aren't a blank checkbook. So how Jardim approaches that situation, I think it remains to be seen, but I think absolutely he can continue on. I mean, not much was expected out of this team 2 years ago, and then look what happened. They've got a pretty good UEFA coefficient at this point. They're looking to be a second or third seed when the draw is made in the group stage. And building on that, they could easily get into the knockout round. And, you know, as we saw with them beating Arsenal 3 years ago and the success they had against Manchester City and Dortmund 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago, as it were, why not? You know, another deep Champions League run, battling PSG for the title, perhaps. There's no reason Jardim would want to leave.
Right. No, absolutely. So So looking into the last team, obviously, is obviously the overwhelming favorites to win Liga, and then obviously are looking to repeat another title in this season in France, is PSG. Now, obviously, you know, I think what we've mentioned so far recently is the fact that PSG are looking to really think more into actually winning the Champions League rather than winning Liga, because I know you certainly, with the exception of that surprise that we saw from Monaco, you know, the team is definitely miles ahead of everyone else in this league. That isn't to say that the stereotype is going to happen like that, but certainly you can make a case for them being miles ahead. But, you know, you look at the moves that they made. You know, they obviously brought in Gigi Buffon. They brought in Mbappe for that ridiculous amount. But they did get rid of players like Pastore, you know, Ben Arfa. You mentioned the retirement of Thiago Motta. Obviously, they have a team. I think when we look at last season, if you remember correctly, they were one of the favorites to win the Champions League. Now, with the inclusion of players like Timothy Weah, you know, the leadership of Gigi Buffon, you know, and many other, and Gonzalo Guedes, who was expected to stay at the club. I mean, certainly you can make a case that this team has enough to win the Champions League. But, you know, and Joe, obviously, I'll go to you first in this one. You know, what is missing for them to actually win the Champions League? Because, you know, with other teams being much more stronger, like Juventus, you talk about Atleti. Talk about Barcelona, Bayern Munich, and Real Madrid always being there at the top. I look at the teams in England, you know, and of course with PSG, they definitely have one of the best teams in the world at the moment. What do you think is missing for them to get to that final step and achieve the Champions League?
You know, I don't have an answer to that question. I mean, it's the one thing where you continuously scratch your head with this PSG side and say to yourself, you know, what's missing? Because they're solid defensively, you know, centrally. They're solid on the wing backs. You know, you should see Dani Alves return back again and contribute. They're solid in the midfield. They have that trequartista, that metronome in Verratti. They have the ability to score goals across the board in Mbappe, Cavani, Neymar. They have good wing play, guys like Di Maria. It doesn't make sense. So I'm wondering if maybe, you know, kind of what I hinted back with Tuchel, you know, just talking about him and PSG and talking about the locker room and managing the egos. I'm wondering if it's that leadership role in the locker room that Gigi Buffon will provide that maybe is the key. I mean, it doesn't necessarily translate into on-pitch talent. But you know, when everyone's happy and everyone is organized and everyone knows their role, teams will function much, much better. Eric, I want to throw that to you because I don't know that there is a good answer to that question about what could possibly be missing from PSG.
Well, honestly, the two things that stand out for me in constructing a team is a left back. Levan Kurzawa, given his injury history, is given his lack of ability to work and work defensively. He's fantastic going forward. Scored one of the goals of the season last year. But there's a reason this guy, approaching 26 years old, only has a dozen caps for France. And Luca Hernandez, who no one had heard of, was in the squad ahead of him this summer at the World Cup. The sale of Brashic and the almost regression of Kurzawa since joining from Monaco leave me very, very questioning about PSG's options at left back. Defensive midfield, you know, we saw this in the loss to Real Madrid that, you know, Unai Emery wasn't really sure whether to go with Giovanni Lo Celso, who's not really a defensive midfielder, or Thiago Mata, who was 36 years old. You know, they had tried to bring in Fabinho last summer, failed to, and have so far failed to bring that in now. I mean, the options you've got there are Verratti, not a defensive midfielder, not happy playing there. Adrian Rabiot, same thing. Lo Celso, who will play there, but doesn't really have the physical presence to do so. And I think that against the very best sides, to not have the solid defensive midfield you need, Petroli in front of that back line, who particularly if Thiago Silva is on the pitch, you're going to need a mobile and adept defensive midfielder. And the same thing at left back. You're going to need someone who's willing to play defensively soundly because Neymar's not going to track back. If you've got an attacking right-sided fullback on the opposite team, you know, say they come up against Real Madrid again. You have Oyarzabal, the new young right back they signed, for example. He'll torch them because Neymar's not going to work track back, and Kurzawa's not going to want to put in the work either. And I think that this team, as currently constructed, you know, again, Tuchel's going to face a lot of frustration trying to get this team to be on the same page to work cohesively. And those two positions in particular are holes for me. I think also the way this goalkeeping situation is being handled is a little bit frustrating to me. I think that obviously Gigi Buffon, with all the experience he has, you can't say a bad word about the guy. But I think that Alphonse Areola had started to make strides last season, particularly in the second half of the season. He was France's third choice for a reason. I think he could potentially be viewed as the goalkeeper of the future for his country. And for me, he should be allowed to continue to work on that and allow his confidence to develop and to grow. And then to have Gigi Buffon, who's, again, a fantastic player, and we saw particularly, against Lyon two seasons ago, and at various points in this Champions League, that he still has what it takes. He still has that winning mentality. But, why should the club ask Areola at, I believe he's 25 or 25 this year, to put his career on hold for another season? This is a player who's been on loan, I believe, three full seasons, Bastia, Villarreal, and Lens, and has still had to battle for time with Kevin Trapp. It shows, and is an academy product. It shows an immense amount of disrespect to him as a player, and I think it also sends a pretty strong message to other academy players. The one thing that, say what you will about Unai Emery and his failure in the Champions League, but his ability to bring through players, the younger players, particularly from the academy and elsewhere, looking at Nkunku, looking at Weah, looking at Lo Celso, not an academy player, but a young player who improved considerably under Emery's stewardship, Presnel Kimpembe. Again, I don't see a mandate for growth, for improvement, for sustainability with this PSG side. And it's the same thing that we've been seeing from this team since QSI took over. It's the quick fix approach. That's great, and it gets you into the Champions League, perhaps around of the quarterfinals on a regular basis, but it's not enough to win. The best teams that win the Champions League that are in the semifinals regularly operate through a model of continuity. And you look at Juventus, who have had all these players through the years, Barzagli, Bonucci, Lichtsteiner, and they add in a way that makes sense, and they subtract in a way that makes sense, and they value younger players and allow them the chance to develop, even if it is a little bit slower. But I feel like if the signing of Buffon, I like the player, I like what he is, but what it represents as a philosophy for PSG is hugely problematic, because they've done nothing to address glaring for me needs at left back and defensive midfield, and they've been incredibly disrespectful to one of the best younger goalkeepers in France, who's not only a younger player who needs more time, I think more opportunities to show what he can do, but is an academy product. So all the academy products that they have there at present are going to see Areola, having gone out on loan for three full seasons, proving himself with Villarreal, a Europa League level club, had done very well. I believe they made it to the semifinals against Liverpool at that point, when he was on loan with them. And to have that level of disrespect shown, what are the other academy products or other young players that might be approached by PSG? How are they supposed to regard that? How are they supposed to regard their potential place in the team? Are they going to want to go there if PSG come knocking? I don't think so. And I don't think that allows this club to reach a level of sustainability, to reach a level of financial wherewithal that's going to allow them to get to where they want to be on a year-in, year-out basis.
Right. So, I agree with you. You look at being a young French player with ambition of maybe making the national team, and you wonder if PSG is the right place. But that's why another reason why I think Monaco, even though we talk about this fire sale, it's just been better equipped to handle the shuffling of the youth and the development of the youth coming up through, because it seems like PSG has taken this focus of, like you had said, just kind of throw money at the problem. So we think we have a problem in spot X, we're just going to throw cash at it rather than develop something. And so far it has not worked out for them, because the ultimate goal for them at this point is the Champions League. But we'll have to see if maybe this season it turns around a little bit. And you wonder, with Areola, will he move on? I know there was rumor that he would possibly be one of the options at Roma in this transfer window. I haven't heard that rumor come up much as of recently, but I think there's option for Areola to say, listen, You brought Buffon in for 2 years. You've got Kevin Trapp here. You know, there are other goalkeepers on this roster. Maybe it is my time to move on and seek greener pastures elsewhere and continue to grow, you know, to the national team goalkeeper that I do want to be, a la Hugo Lloris once he departs. So let's look at our prediction section now of the show, where we look forward and try to predict who will win the league and who the top goal scorer will be. So I think the league one, you know, kind of predicts itself the way we've been talking about this league on this podcast. And Eric, I'm going to go to you first just for laughs, but is it PSG or do you have somebody else in mind?
No, it's got to be PSG. I think that I'm frustrated with the way that they're approaching a potentially promising situation, but given the depth they have on that squad, there's no way they're not going to make it.
I agree with you. You know, I've got PSG as well. Rob, how about you, sir?
PSG all the way, and I think they're going to win it by, I'll give them 12 points.
You give them 12?
12 points. You'll give them 12-point lead against second, which I think will be, I'll agree with them. I'll agree with Eric here and say Marseille will finish second as well. Wow. So I think that's will be the two big depths.
You know, I'm going to actually throw Lyon in that spot instead in second place. I guess, you know, I've got PSG as well, but I'm going to throw Lyon in there because I really think that they're quite talented still, you know, despite losing some players. I think they're still, you know, heavily talented, and it's going to be a question as to whether they manage what talent they have left on the roster. But this is another fantastic attacking side, and I think they can challenge, but I do think it'll be 10-11 points when all is said and done. So let's talk about the tougher prediction to make, let's say, and that is the top goal scorer in Ligue 1. Last year, Edison Cavani, you know, took the honors there. He's been at the top of that list for quite some time, whether it be in Paris or in Ligue 1, or when he did it in Napoli in the Serie A. So, you know, looking forward, obviously Neymar, you've seen Mbappe growing. Nabil Fekir had a fantastic season last year, was towards the top of the charts. Rob, I'm going to go to you first, sir. Who do you think is going to win the scoring title?
There's so many players out there that are capable of winning the scoring title in Paris. I'm sorry, in Ligue 1. But actually, I think it's going to go to Paris regardless. I think it's I'm going to go for Kylian Mbappe. I think he has the potential of being that star player on the team. Maybe more so, maybe not as much so as Neymar, where he's going to definitely provide service to Mbappe. And I feel that that is going to help Mbappe, you know, try to get the goals that he wants, and rightly so. You know, at 19, is just going to have his stock more higher than ever before. So I'm putting Kylian Mbappe to win the top goal scorer.
Now, Eric, how about you? I mean, you look at PSG, and you always wonder, because are there enough soccer balls on the pitch for everyone to play nicely? But they scored 108 goals in 38 matches in league last season. So who do you think will win the goal scoring title this year in the Ligue 1?
I think it's Neymar, and I think it's going to be close between himself, Nabil Fekir, and Kylian Mbappe and Cavani. But I think by virtue of the fact that Neymar is the penalty taker for PSG, that could shade another 6, 7, 8, maybe even 10 goals. I think that's enough to make the difference. I would guess, I would not be surprised to see him scoring north of 30 goals next season, or this season coming up.
You know, it is a nice little benefit that you do get the freebies there, until there's an argument again, and maybe Cavani gets those duties again. We'll have to see if we have more drama, or if Tuchel's able to manage all those egos in the locker room. I actually went with Kylian Mbappe myself before the show started. I, you know, just thinking back to the World Cup this kid had, thinking back to, you know, how he's grown from his days at Monaco, last season at PSG, what he did at the World Cup. I just feel like he's on this skyrocket north, and I think he might edge out Edson Cavani. I wonder if Neymar will get there, just like you said, because they get the goals spread out amongst many, many players on PSG, but at the same time, like you said, Eric, he does get the penalties, so we'll have to see if that benefits him. And you know, but I'm gonna hang my hat on Mbappe, because he seems to be able to do it from pretty much anywhere on the pitch. And as a growing player, I think we've seen him start to flourish and maybe become one of those top five strikers in the world as his career progresses. So, gentlemen, I do want to thank you both for joining me tonight. and helping me break down the Ligue 1 season. So for Eric Devine from Get French Football News and for my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas, thank you for listening to the 2018-2019 Ligue 1 preview on This Week in Football from the makers of From the makers of Low Limit Football. Thanks for listening and good night.